Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Welcome to part two of our classical Q&A show for October. I'm Martin Gregg, and with me today are Graham Hunter, host of The Big Interview, and our guest for these shows, La Liga TV's Pete Jensen. We have questions, as always, from our socios who support this podcast at patreon.com/GrahamHunter and from our sponsors at Bet365. First up is socio Max McCauley. I think this is the first time we've heard from Max, so Max, thanks for sending us your question. He says, Graham, I've heard you talk a lot about Vinicius Junior's potential. What is his ceiling and how does he match up against the Barcelona defence on Sunday? Max, thank you for asking that question, because we obviously referred to this in part one of the Q&A, and this gives Graham a chance to talk more at length about this talent who he's been banging the drum for probably a couple of seasons now. Graham, over to you.
Maxi baby. Not only welcome in, but please feel free to ask this same question, identical, every couple of months. Look, ceiling, well, I don't know, because this is a guy who, in my view, has shown a sponge-like ability to learn and learn in a hothouse environment. He's also a throwback to players who, particularly over the Pete and my lives. Martin, I can't remember if you thrilled to, although you helped set up an interview with Tony Curry, Frank Worthington, Duncan McKenzie, Alan Hudson, players that who shone down in England when I was growing up, but who were coaches at international level, England job, found it really easy to ignore them. Well, Vinicius right now is being completely ignored by Tite, their record-breaking Brazil coach, whose football is very bread and butter, and who, you know, is blessed with a reasonably talented squad, but and an extraordinary striker in Neymar, but whose attitude is, well, I don't need frills, I don't need thrills, I don't need a guy who might give me something, but who might lose the. So Vinicius, at the moment, is either not being picked, or when he is picked, as he was for the last international set-up, bench. You know, splinters on the bum. So ceilings would include, can he harness what is clearly a latent finishing ability to do special things, not just to score regularly? Because at the moment, he is scoring and assisting at or better the rate that Messi and Cristiano did at the same age. So Max, just drink that in. His stats prove that at 21, there are areas in which he's just under Messi, but ahead of Ronaldo, or just under Cristiano Ronaldo, but ahead of Messi. In some instances, his stats are lower and his goals are higher. He's on a par, statistically, in terms of purely goals and assists compared to the two greatest footballers of our working lifetimes. But both of them exploded. Both of them suddenly went on to score a rate which, even if you include Greaves or Müller, had never, or Gunnar Nordahl, Pelé, had never, ever been seen before in their goal and assist per game ratio. Is that Vinicius' ceiling? You'd have to say possibly, because I think, although I've always seen Vinicius as having things that are very special, and I'm encouraged by the way in which he's adapted his game. His decision-making is much better. His ability to win the respect of his colleagues in terms of what he does with the ball, what he does to receive the ball, that has changed out of all recognition. His finishing at the moment, not just his goal total, but how he finishes has changed out of all recognition from his first couple of seasons at Real Madrid. So maybe this giant leap forward is coming from him. But to see another footballer of the ilk of Cristiano and Messi right now, so sooner after they've both moved on from their signature clubs and they're both in their mid-30s, is too much to hope for, I think. So the obvious answer is he should become the guy that wins trophies for Madrid. He should become the guy that goes on to feed Mbappe rather than be replaced by Mbappe, because he plays in a position that Mbappe thinks is his own. So there are stormy waters ahead, and he should go on to be a player that doesn't simply bring the thrill back to the Pentacampeones, but who makes people begin to love Brazilian football, international football again. And I think he has those. I think they're within his capacity.
Yeah, Graham mentioning Mbappe, I think is key, because we believe he's going to be playing at Madrid next season. So what then happens to Vinicius? And talking about hitting the ceiling, talking about reaching the heights of Messi and Ronaldo both reinvented themselves probably a couple of times, but certainly at least once. You know, Ronaldo going from the step-over king on the wing to being the centre-forward, and obviously Messi becoming the false nine, having started on the right. Can Vinicius do that, or is he going to be one of these players who says, no, I'm not playing as well at the moment because I'm not playing in my position? You know, something you never ever heard Messi or Ronaldo say, that no such thing as my position. So that maybe will prevent him from reaching the heights that they reached, even temporarily. Whenever you hear anyone say that goal scoring is just something you're either born with or you aren't born with, there's just two words that destroy that argument, and that's Cristiano Ronaldo. Ronaldo at United, when he first turned up, if you'd have said to someone, this guy's going to become the all-time great, the all-time top scorer at Real Madrid, no one would have believed it. And Vinicius has improved remarably as a goal scorer in terms of the positions he takes up and the decisions he makes when he's in those positions. Just enjoy him, and let's hope we can enjoy him for Brazil. Brazil have become, you know, me and Graham grew up in an era when it was so much fun watching Brazil. You know, I mean, they saw David Neri hit that goal from the outside of the area in the 82. Was it 82, Graham? And they thought, you know, we should be doing this all the time. And that's the way, that was the way forward for them. And for a whole decade, you know, they were so much fun to watch, and obviously into the 90s as well. And they are very functional these days in comparison with that. And the fact that Vinicius isn't featuring is an illustration of that. But just enjoy him. He's not going to be Ronaldo, but he is going to be very, very important going forward. And as Graham says, not to be replaced by, but to accompany Mbappe next season. And one thing I like that Ancelotti's doing is, because you hear Madrid fans, one of the criticisms of Vinicius is he doesn't track back, he doesn't work back. You don't want him tracking back. You know, when they play that 4-3-3, let Rodrigo, who works extremely hard, let him be the one who makes the four in midfield when they don't have the ball, and let Vinicius stay on the shoulder of the last defender and be the threat at the other end of the pitch. Work hard, but work hard at the other end.
Mondi and Vinicius have an absolutely innate, fun relationship on the pitch. They blend. They are, what's that thing where the whole is greater than the sum of the parts? It's 1+1=3 when they're playing on the left wing. Vinicius clearly is a right footer that wants to cut in onto his right, which is where the comparison with Cristiano Ronaldo, who switched from a right winger into a left-sided striker coming in. Mbappe plays that left-sided striker coming in onto his right foot. He doesn't often go out wide, and Vinicius almost never now goes out wide on the left wing. He can do, but it's a rarity. But for Ferland Mondi, who Florentino Perez doesn't rate at all, and Mondi knows it. What it is, I don't know. But Mondi is an extremely important footballer for Real Madrid because he's gifted. He plays five-a-side football down the left-hand side. He's got a good sprint. He's got a good reading and anticipation. He's physically strong. Keeping Mondi fit and allowing him and Vinicius to play their five-a-side football down the left-hand side can be an enormous strength for Madrid this season. So Max, there's another thing to look out for before Vinicius has to confront this Mbappe problem that we're talking about.
I thought it was a brilliant point you made, Pete, about finishing and how, you know, you can train yourself to be a world-class finisher. That was one thing that struck me the other night with the Nets game, that I mean, as somebody who sees him quite often, but not week in, week out, the two different finishes, I mean, the dink finish over the keeper and then the incredible finish at the near post, where he just a kind of rising, blasting shot past the goalkeeper. I mean, two very different types of finishes, and a player who's, you know, oozes confidence, but can finish in different ways.
Yeah, and as Graham said, in Brazil he was prolific and playing more centrally, and then there's scope for him to do that in the way that Madrid play with Benzema dropping so deep. You know, I think he can get 20 goals this season. That's not outrageous, is it, Graham? He's having started so well.
I think it's well within his capacity. And Martin's talk about different finishes. If you look at the lift that he did at Levante early in the season, to see just the tiniest angle, and not to strike the ball, but just to get onto the ball and kind of just scoop it into the keeper's far left-hand corner at a diagonal angle where he shouldn't really have been able to see it. That was very special. But occasionally, he could do special things. And what has disappeared, every golfer, you know, shanks a ball. Every footballer mishits something. We've seen the greatest miss unbelievable chances. So he will continue to produce moments where you're like, he definitely should have scored there. What's gone out of his game and why he can hit 20 should now. Now we have to, even though he's only 21, we have to be saying he should score 20 plus this season. I think that's the right level of responsibility to be pushing at him. And he likes being pushed. He's one who responds to that. So Madrid should be saying, you know, another 13 in all competitions, but probably 20 in La Liga should be the target. At any rate, the thing that has changed most of all, Martin, is that slight sang-froid in front of the goal, which pertains more to the first goal, the Modric set up, than the second one. Because most teams in Spain know his dribbling style. In fact, Vinicius came out afterwards and said, like, yeah, I always try that dribble. And often in training it comes off. In matches it costs more. Well, that's because, you know, in matches, people, you know, the analytics that are done now are incredible. And if you're playing Vinicius as a defender or a defensive midfielder over a couple of seasons, you've got a build-up of information that says, I know what you're going to do. Now, knowing and preventing are two completely different things. So that little dribble goal, which added, you know, Parmesan on top of the pasta for Madrid in Kiev, that wasn't the important one, because he's always been able to do special things. It's the regularity of finishing that's changed and that will make him much more important this season. And as Peter says, you know, should make him a 20-goal player this season, minimum 20 goals.
Okay, next up is a question from another socio who we haven't heard from before, Anna Masterson, who says, how did Graham and Pete assess the progress made by Ancelotti this season ahead of Sunday's Clásico? So this is quite an open question, but it's a bit of a teacher's report card. You know, after 3 or 4 months, how would you both mark Ancelotti's progress?
I think he would have known at the start of the season what his biggest challenge was going to be, because Florentino basically said, look, you're losing Varane, we're not renewing Ramos, and we're not really bringing anyone in. We've got Alaba coming in, but we're not going to get another centre-back in. So he would have known what the biggest challenge was in many ways defensively. They've got three players, really, for two positions. I don't think that they would consider Vallejo a serious option for big games. So it's Nacho, Alaba and Militao, and he's got to make the best of that. I think he's now realised, or maybe he's always known, that the best partnership is Alaba Militao, and the more they play together, the better it will be. His other problem is that there's no replacement for Carvajal, really, and he has terrible injury problems, which is such a shame. So defensively, he would have known at the start it's not going to be easy. There are signs of partnership developing, definitely between Alaba and Militao. Mendy coming back is huge. And in fact, it will be interesting to see if in emergency, Mendy can also play as a left back, because I think Miguel Gutierrez is a fantastic prospect and could quite happily operate as Madrid's left back, certainly in the league. And if there is an emergency, then Mendy is maybe another option at centre back. But what I'm trying to say is he's trying to work that out, and we are seeing some progress there. Lucas has had a big dip, having originally looked it looked like he could make the transition, as we've seen other players do. Jesus Navas is a great example. Then he had a couple of really, really bad games. He was better in midweek against Shakhtar. So that's the big challenge. And at the other end of the pitch, we've already spoken about it, really. It's been all about... It was classic Ancelotti, wasn't it? Because when he came in, it was all the senior guys. It was the heavyweights. You know, Hazard started, Bale started. But bit by bit, we're now... What we saw on Tuesday was a very exciting front three, Rodrigo, Benzema and Vinicius. And I think that's the way forward. He's been bold with Camavinga, and that's paid off as well. They just look at how... There's more... Alegría, as the Spanish say. There's more joy about them this season. Let's see how things are looking on, Sunday afternoon after the game. But I think it's a positive start. And more positive than I expected, because coming back, it can be tough. But it's freshened things up, and I think it's been a good start.
Anna, you know when you get prepped for a job interview and you're always warned... Be careful about the words that the employers use, and diving straight into their words. You know, stop and try and reframe the question and the answer to your own benefit. So I want to look at your word progress, and I'm not absolutely certain that that's the right premise, because I don't think there's a big project going on. There's certainly not a new project going on. I don't think that Ancelotti is a progress coach. I think he's a placeholder. I think he was brought in because they reckon that next summer will be the great leap forward. They reckon that they will get Mbappe and they're competitive for Haaland. Right now, Paris Saint-Germain are trying their little French backsides off to renew Mbappe's contract. So that's a finger in the eye for José Ángel Sánchez and Florentino Pérez if they do. So... If I can rework the idea of progress, I think that the only way that Ancelotti's been asked to progress this is to try and win trophies, to try and ensure that there's something tangible as a product of this season. They had no trophies last season, and it's become a habit of theirs not to retain the title. So it's clear that... You know, victory is expected of him, success is expected of him. But I don't think that Florentino Perez has asked him for a rebranding in the playing style. The heroes are identical for the last couple of seasons. It's still Courtois, Casemiro, Modric, Kroos, Benzema. And if you take a little sneaky look back at your word of progress, then you can say that either by Ancelotti's hand or maybe by... momentum and the players themselves, you can see progress in Rodrigo, whose ability to score and make important goals this season has gone up. We've discussed at length the progress that Vinicius is making, and Ancelotti has a stake in that, and there's no question, but not the sole stake in that progress. His willingness to use Camavinga, or his aptitude about when to use him, because when the president makes a signing like Camavinga, you can't leave him on the bench for 6 weeks to learn. Otherwise, you get a call to the headmaster's office. So beyond that, I would have liked to have seen more progress in him, not having made the mistake of letting the team become entrenched at Espanyol. Real Madrid is a side which, as he said himself, needs to play 4-3-3, needs to be front foot, needs to press, needs to take the game to opponents and run the risk at the back. Militao is quick. He's an improving defender. Alaba, not necessarily quick, and is Marcelo-esque in how he likes to go out wandering. No question about his quality, his experience. None. No question that it's the best centre-back partnership with Militao on the right and Alaba on the left. But Alaba is definitely in need of occasional blinkers. That's something for Ancelotti to fix. So for my taste, it's a Martin asked for a scorecard. It's approximately 7 out of 10 at the moment, with the threat of them being trophy winners, realistic. But, and I go back to the idea that I don't think Ancelotti is a coach now at this age, with his background, via whom you invest to make great progress. Little pockets of progress, yeah, but the revolution in the club and how they play probably can only come after two more transfer markets And whether it's Ancelotti seeing that through or not, I think he's open for debate.
Okay, it's time for a break. We'll be back in a moment with a couple more questions to complete part two of this month's Q&A.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. If you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. Use the Stamps.com mobile app to mail everything you need to keep your business running with up to 89% off USPS and UPS. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Use code PROGRAM for a special offer. That's Stamps.com, code PROGRAM.
And we're back with a question from Socio Robert Ryan. Robert says, I have grown up in the west of Scotland where you get Partick Thistle fans who say, I hate the old firm, and many other fans across Scotland who have no time for them both either. They maybe even hate them. Of course, the Clásico isn't a local derby, but is there a disdain from other teams and their fans towards this fixture? So, I mean, this is a really interesting question because I've never thought about this before. I mean, I've been in other parts of Spain where maybe Barca or Madrid have been playing and the games have been on in the background and some people have been watching, some people haven't. But I've never actually thought about what they both thought about or what these other fans and other teams thought about this fixture in particular. So can you guys shed any light on that?
I'll be brief here. One of the things that people echo here is that when you come to live in this country for the first time and you travel around and you watch certain communities, certain cities drop their knickers when Barcelona or Real Madrid come to town and pick up the strip or the bufanda, what do you call it, bufanda, scarf, that they've got in their drawer. And, you know, this week and for 40 weeks of the season, they're a Racing Santander or they're a Malaga fan. But if Barcelona or Real Madrid in town, They use their season ticket book to get into the stadium, and then they support Barcelona or Real Madrid. You must have seen that, mm-hmm. Pete.
I was in a cab last night, and the taxi driver was a Real Sociedad fan, but he was a Catalan, and he couldn't stand Barcelona or Madrid. He can't stand the way that they dominate the media coverage. He can't stand the way they're always moaning about the refereeing, which is quite laughable, by the way, because they're both as bad as one another in terms of saying that the referee's against them, when in fact the referees usually are against the other 18 clubs, if they're against anyone. So, that's one answer to the question. The Catalan taxi driver chooses not to support Barcelona. He watched Real Sociedad win the league growing up as a kid. Speaking to me last night about López Ufarte and Arcanada and that's his team. So, there will be a few people in Spain who will be, you know, they'll watch it and they'll enjoy it as the great game that it is. But I love the clubs where they don't have that, my this is my team, but I also like, you know. And there are clubs like that in Spain. I mean, you won't get too many Athletic Bilbao fans who say that they, you know, have a second team. It's a similar story with Sevilla and Betis as well. Real Sociedad, I've already mentioned. Up in Asturias, the Oviedo fans and the Gijón fans, you know, there are fairly decent sized pockets around the country where they don't have that, yeah, this is my team, but also I like Madrid or Barca, which is healthy.
I know, I've always quite liked that, the sort of entrenched tribal nature of like football fandom, right? I do like that, right? But what I would push back and one thing, like, you know, Robert's talking about Scottish football, like, probably the most talented player I've ever seen in Scottish football, one of the most talented players I've ever seen in the flesh, is Lubomir Mrávčík. When 33-year-old Mrávčík pitched up at Celtic, I remember saying to non-Celtic supporting friends, go and see this guy. Like, it's a life experience to see a player this good in the flesh. And I sometimes think if you are, you know, you're drawing your battle lines and you're saying, you know, it's my team and, you know, forget the rest of them, then you miss out. You know, your football diet is less rich sometimes if you don't appreciate talents on your doorstep.
Do you love your club only? Do you love your club and love football too? That's the dividing line. Because if you love football too, you've got no hesitation in admiring Davy Cooper or Bobby Russell, or I certainly growing up had no hesitation in admiring, you know, Dalglish or flipping Davy Hay, for example. That wasn't hard to do. And as much as one side of the classical divide is dominant, I have never had any worries, any problems about saying, look at that player in that colour strip. He's exceptional or he's rubbish. I think the reason that you and Pete and I and all our socios are gathered together in this this area is a curiosity and inquisitiveness and a love of football in general, rather than what you're talking about, that like having to drag people to go and watch Moravchik.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, for example, like the most fervent Athletic fan, would they have fully appreciated Messi, Ronaldo having these players in their national game? Or would they not experience, you know, the full richness of what they gave to Spanish football?
Pete will be more articulate on this than me, but like a little recent example. The Monday night game was Betis playing, Alaves, I think? Playing at Alaves. In fact, you were coming, weren't you?
Yeah, I think so, yeah. That doesn't help me remember it. I think you're right. I think it was Alaves.
But when 40-year-old non-virgin Joaquin comes on, the very staunch Mendy Zarosa crowd applauded him on.
They did, yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, yeah. Okay, Iniesta, when he won the World Cup, raises a Danny Harkey shirt. But he's then applauded at every stadium around the... And I know, Martin, you chose Messi as the question. But you genuinely see... for a consistent handful of special footballers. Like, for example, I think Pete and I were both at the Ronaldinho Clásico, which I think was Messi's debut in a Clásico. And, you know, I happened to have I was given by somebody a ticket that was a hospitality ticket from one of the players. And I was sitting in a section where I thought, this will be elite people. And the racist abuse of Eto'o and Ronaldinho was as disgusting as I've ever heard in my life. I was on the point of leaving. There were no stewards intervening. I had a couple of spats with people about what they were saying. It wasn't very far from me being ejaculated. And Ronaldinho scores. And people all around us, but particularly one that was, you know, a mustachioed guy who was pictured in the papers, but people all around us, having abused them because of the colour of the skin, stood up and applauded Ronaldinho, Madrid fans. So I do think that there's the same degree of venom and hate and not bigotry, because that's a different phrase, but like caustic blind hatred of certain clubs and fan bases for others here. It's not totally immune from what Robert introduced and you were talking about in Scotland. But there is a far more ready, it's a bigger country, it's a far more ready recognition of elegance and a great career or moments of magic in this country than there is, not in the Scotland I grew up in, but in the Scotland that you know, has got increasingly poisoned over the last 20, 25 years.
That's really interesting. Good question, Robert. Thanks for that. Let's finish in one from our sponsors at Bet365. Who do Graham and Pete think will be a potential match winner for either Barcelona or Real Madrid on Sunday? So I think we're looking for one name here and why.
I'm going to say Jordi Alba for both positive and negative reasons for Barcelona. I think one of the best things that came out of last night's game for Barca was the number of times that Alba got beyond everyone and put balls into the area and until Piqué stepped up and showed Luke de Jong how to get on the end of them, it wasn't coming to much. But I think he can be important for Madrid. He can be important for Barcelona, but he can also be a point of weakness. And I think it was last season when Valverde kind of got in behind him and that's how Madrid got the better of Barcelona. So that for me is a key part of the game, Alba, both in terms of what he gives Barcelona in an attacking sense and how potentially Madrid can expose Barca's inability to deal with the fact that Alba, in order to be effective, has to be quite often at the other end of the pitch. And we've already spoken about Vinicius, and he will get a run, I'm sure, at Sergio Roberto if Roberto plays at right back or desperate. You only wanted one name, didn't you? So I've giving you one name for both sides, which is a bit screwed up. But anyway, Jordi Alba's the man to watch in both a positive and a negative sense for both teams. If he plays, of course, Graham, because he was heavily strapped with ice, wasn't he, last night? But I think the latest is, and obviously we're speaking on Thursday, but I think the latest is he is going to be okay.
I very much hope so, because he was, you know, he was clearly in his pomp, man of the match against Dinamo. I'm going to go for Vinicius, but for a micro reason rather than just my appreciation of him, because Barcelona's central defending is not particularly good. They make individual decisions about who to mark, about when to press, when not to press. It's not a system. Eric Garcia has been sent off twice this season already, and in each case, it's been because of his inability to get close to power and pace and not be swivelled and then tug back or foul. So Vinicius, presumably Eric Garcia, who was suspended against Dinamo, presumably Longley was okay against Dinamo, but Koeman doesn't trust him. That was only his second start of the season. Araujo won't make it. Umtiti keeps telling everybody, I'm fitter than I was when I came to Football Club Barcelona. And that might be true, but he's very, very slow. So the same analogy applies. Piqué's reading of a game is still first rate, but his physical ability to cope with pace is different. So Vinicius should be the difference for Real Madrid. And it would just be ludicrous not to mention Ansu, because his development has still to come. Koeman made big play of this in the post-match press conference, where he said, look, he doesn't turn 19 till next season. Till next month. He's been out for a year. There are things to change. Pete already identified absolute, complete, you know, killer decision-making in a goal-scoring situation. But he has things that he's already scored in a Clásico, okay, in a defeat, 3-1 at home last season. He has things that Madrid don't like, which include the ability to time a run in behind, the ability to take a man on one-on-one, the ability to dribble and win penalties and free kicks. I think Vinicius and Ansu, they're reasonably easy answers to give, but they're honestly what I feel by the end of Sunday afternoon, we'll be saying, look at that kid, look at that 21-year-old, look at that 18-year-old, look what they've just done.
I know Super Sunday is an overused phrase, but I did catch a tweet from Gab Marcotti earlier on in the week where he said that in the space of 7 hours on Sunday, you can watch Man United, Liverpool, Barca, Real Madrid, Inter, Juve and Marseille, PSG.
He's forgotten about Real Sociedad, Atletico Madrid, by the way, which the champions against the team at the moment, top of the table.
Okay, that's it.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
For the second part of this month's Q&A, thank you to all our socios who sent questions for this month's show. Graham Hunt and Pete Jensen, thank you very much, and thank you to you for listening. We'll be back with more big interviews very soon.